This episode of Yes But Why podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
So basically, I was really young and I did like ballet classes from the age of 5 to 10, and I think I was probably about 7 years old. And I was doing, and I was terrible at ballet, by the way, like really, really bad. Like one of the worst in the whole, like, you know, ballet school. But we constantly worked on like little shows, and we were rehearsing for this ballet show, and they always used to stick me at the back because they just didn't want anyone to see me. But, you know, just like put her at the back. And I was kind of like tall as well for my age. And so they would just like sort of put me to the back. But I just remember really vividly, right, like as we were rehearsing one day, it was a Saturday afternoon, and you know, like you can't really remember much from your like early childhood, you just like remember little snippets.
Totally.
But I remember having this like fire in my belly that I can't even really understand, like I can't even explain. It was like, it was such a severe like passion, right, for being on the stage. And we were just rehearsing, and I was looking at all the other like little girls, and they all just looked a bit bored, or you know, like wanted to be elsewhere. And I was just like, "Oh my god, like this is it, like this is it." And like the music was kicking in because it was like we were like doing a sort of disco ballet dance.
Yeah.
This is like the early 90s, you know.
Yeah, disco ballet. Let's just, do it.
Yeah, it was like disco ballet, and it was the song. Oh god, what is it again? It's like, I got the key, I got the secret. Have you heard that song before?
I don't know.
I got the key to you. It's like, I don't know if it was just like really big in the UK, but it was like a really big sort of song. And I just remember that like kicking in and just feeling like ecstatic about being on stage. But I was too young to realize, I suppose, that ballet wasn't like the skill for me. But I was just like, I knew that I'd found, like, I knew I was meant to be on stage. Like, I just knew it.
Yeah.
But I hadn't found the skill yet. You know,
yeah.
So that's like honestly that my first memory of just being like, oh my god, like, and that passion just never went away. It just grew and it grew and it grew and it built. And then when I realized that actually I wanted to act, I was still really young when I realized, I was still about 8 years old when I realized I wanted to be an actress. And then as I got older, I realized I was funny as well, so I kind of like, you know, started doing comedy and stuff. But that never went away, that feeling of just like that burning desire to like perform.
So after ballet, what was the next thing? Like, were you were passionate about performing now? Were you, you know, singing pop songs in malls? Well, I don't know. That's what happens here. Maybe not there.
I love that you're like, so after ballet, as if I'd like achieved a lot in the ballet industry. Like, you know, like after ballet, when I was like the worst.
Well, no, you said you finished when you were 10. And yes. So I figure, you know, there's probably some other activity that happens at 10. And like 10's what, like, yes, fifth grade? So, you know, you're starting middle school. Who knows what happens, yeah, in the theater world? I don't have any, yeah, preconceived notions about the education system in the UK. So like, for instance, every time I talk to somebody from Canada, I'm like, so you guys did improv in elementary school? And they're like, what? So that's my thing that I think is,
yes,
real,
totally.
But that's not,
that's the thing.
Real,
it's,
apparently.
It's even like in the UK, it's different, right? So in Scotland, we call it primary school and then high school, right? Whereas in England, they have like a different way of saying it. So even in the UK, it's confusing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like England say year 9, year 10, whereas we would be like second year, third year.
Yeah.
And it would mean like the same ages. It's so bizarre. that all around the world, it's like there's different ways of saying the same thing.
We love renaming crap. That's our number one thing. This one's ours. No, that's, people love that. Oh man. Okay. But so you're heading into, you know, by like 10, you know, I remember specifically when I turned 10, I was like, okay guys, I'm double digits now. I'm an adult. Like I legitimately said that. And so yes, I feel like at that point, you know, you can do whatever you want. Did you do, you know, like acting classes or plays in school? How involved did you get early on?
Yeah, so not actually that early on. I didn't start like acting classes till I was like 14. So between the ages of like, once I finished ballet, so between 10 and 14, I wasn't really, apart from making little shows in my house, you know, for my parents and all that kind of thing, I wasn't doing any acting. It was just one of those, like, I think it's like, you know, being working class, you don't have the same maybe opportunities, you don't have the same, do you know what I mean? You don't have the same like kind of, like basically I worked with a girl recently that did her first film when she was 9 years old. And I was like amazed by that because I was like, oh my God, you had an agent when you were nine? and she was like, yeah. And she'd gone to like a really sort of private school. And I was just like, oh my God, like I wanted to be in a film when I was nine, but I would have had no idea of how to kind of go about that. Do you know what I mean?
So oh, I think it's I don't like, even know yeah, how to be in a film now. So
I know it's crazy, isn't it? Like a 9 year old, like in a big film, you're just like, what? How is that a thing?
You know, it's funny though. I do teach kids, and occasionally there's one where you're like, oh my God. Like, I remember I did this workshop, and there was just this little girl, and I was like, that girl is Meryl Streep, but in the future. Like, she was so, I mean, if she's not an actress, she's like going to be a senator or something. She was just so like poised, and like you could tell her to do something, and she'd just immediately do that thing. Like, it'd be like, act like this. Oh, okay. You know, I was like, oh my God, you know, so yeah, but you know, some kids are like that. And I think you're right. There are a lot of, you know, opportunities versus not so much. And I agree with you that, you know, not having sort of like taking classes. I mean, I didn't take any classes. I think I did ballet when I was a little kid. And then the only thing that I remember is that my mom worked. So I had this like after school nanny who was essentially just like, I realize now later as I get older, like this was some 19 year old girl who like they paid to hang out in a room of the elementary school with the five or six kids whose parents couldn't pick them up until like, you know, later. But I was like, she's our special. She like helps because she would be like, what do you guys want to do? You want to do a play? Let's do a play. And like, we do this whole thing. And I felt very creative at this point, you know, like I was like, this is right. This is the stuff. This is how you do it. So sometimes it's like,
that's cool though.
You know, it's like I understand what you mean when you said like you have the passion. Like I totally get it. I was immediately like, the first time I did an impression to my mom and her friends and they laughed, I was like, oh yeah, I got more of those.
Like, yeah, like you like that?
No problem. Totally. And I mean, you know, you know how it is too. Like, I mean, it saves me through life. Like in general, when things get rough, I'm all like, who wants to dance? It's fine. Like, you know.
Totally. Yeah. And just getting laughs, isn't it? Getting like, you know, getting a laugh is like just one of the best feelings in the world.
Yeah.
Whether that's like a professional laugh or just making like your pal laugh when they're down, it's like just such an amazing addictive feeling.
Yeah, did you make your parents laugh at home too then?
Oh my God, yeah. But like again, I didn't realize, so I feel like I was training to become a stand-up comedian without realizing it, because I was I'm not trying to sound arrogant as if like, oh my God, I was just so funny. I don't mean it like that. Because I always had my heart set on being an actress, but I just never ever thought about anything else. Like I was like laser focused about acting, but I was always like the class clown. I was always trying to like lighten situations. I was always just, do you know what I mean? That's just like my natural instinct to try and be funny and lighten the mood. And so when I did get into stand-up, it was suddenly like, oh my God, this, because I did actually fall into stand-up. I didn't ever, intend that at all. But then when it when it happened and I was progressing quite quickly and I was like, oh my God, this was actually like meant to be. Like, you know, when you're like, oh my God, look, it makes sense now.
Yeah.
Like it does.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How does one fall into stand-up? I mean, generally they require you to, you know, be okay with being up on stage. And generally, I've certainly been in a show where they're like, and you're on stage now. And thankfully I can be like, okay. But, you know, how does that happen? Did somebody like you lose a bet and they're like, you know, now you gotta go on the open mic?
Yeah, like now you have to do stand up. Honestly, it was really it was just a weird one because I was at drama school, in like well it was near London at a place called Rose Bruford, and what was good about the drama school was it wasn't just like a drama school where you were taught how to act and that was it and you were sort of you know what was really really good about it is you were told how to be a creative, like how to be an artist and that you should always be working on stuff and you should always be writing your own material and. You know, whether that's drama, comedy, anything, but they're just saying, like, you're actually going to save yourself when you come out because there's going to be a lot of periods of not working. And if you're basically fulfilling yourself and you're not just, like, relying on, you know, your agent to call you.
Wow,
and so
right.
I really took that to heart because I was like, oh, my God, that's so true because I was, like, in my mid-20s when I went to drama school and I was very unfulfilled at the time, right? Like, I'd been living in London a long time. I'd been trying so hard to get auditions and stuff, and it just wasn't, like, really happening. I was just doing, like, tiny little things, you know? And so I'm at drama school, and that really, like, rung true to me. I thought, oh, my God, I could be, like, making my own work and stuff, right? So I wrote a play. It was a one-woman show, and it was called Memoirs of a Bunny Boiler, and it was, like, all about my love life. And it was a comedy, but... Like I say, it was written as a monologue, like as a one woman show. But then when I did it, it became a stand up show because there were some nights where I'd be performing it and I'd be like getting bored of doing the exact same lines. So I would kind of come out of it and I was like chatting to the audience and finding out about them and you know and people were coming up to me afterwards going, oh, how long you've been doing stand up? And I was like, huh? Like I hadn't made the connection yet. You see.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It was like, it was completely accidental. I honestly never in my life would have imagined that I'd be a stand-up because well as an actress. But now that
so
I've found
funny.
It, I'm like so glad that I did, you know?
They're so similar. Like I live in a world where one person shows are a lot. There's and I direct quite a few of them, you know what I mean? Like I try to get involved with helping that kind of stuff. And it's so funny how close it is to stand-up. Like
100%.
And you know what's even funnier, even just saying out loud that I did some directing, I've watched 1,000 stand-up specials and every time I see that there's a director and in my mind, even though I do this, I think, what does that director do? And I was like, God, what do you do? Like,
I know.
You know,
totally.
I was like, oh,
totally.
Right. He's a person too. Okay. All right. Sure. Like, it's so funny how, you know, you can see people doing something that seems to you wilder. Like, cause you're right. Stand up seems separate from one people shows and they're the same in that one person is speaking and presenting comedic material, but it's like,
yes.
It makes you feel differently. And also audiences for one people shows are much different than stand-up audiences, I would say.
Totally, yeah. Totally,
and the crowd is different. Yeah.
One time I did. So once I was a stand-up, and once I was just you know doing club sets and hosting shows and all that kind of thing, I did like my new show at a theatre last year, and so it was very much a theatre audience rather than a stand-up audience. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was a completely different audience than I was used to, and they were terrified of me because. They were like, oh my God, she's broken the fourth wall. You know, they weren't expecting me to talk to them.
Yeah.
And I remember I kept saying to them, like, I'm sorry, like, if you've never seen a comedian before, like, and I'm like, how did you get here? Did you have a good journey? And like, just asking them really normal questions, but they were like fucking freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just remember thinking that. I was like, oh my God, you are such a like theatre audience. You're not, you know, you're not a comedy audience at all, but. By the end, I kind of had them, but I just think it's so interesting. That's why because I'm an actress and I'm a stand-up, so I've got like a foot in both worlds. I'm so passionate about trying to bring theatre and stand-up together a bit more because they are similar, but such a different kind of type of person, enjoys each. And I think it'd be so cool to kind of intertwine that a bit more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of, you know, like when people do, it's almost like, I don't know, there's a couple of people here and there that do those kinds of things where like there's one person and they're the main character, but they also do like all sorts of sketch stuff like Tracy Ullman back in the day.
She'd be all the
characters and but they would flow from one to the next. And at that in and of itself is similar-ish, I guess. That's the difference, yeah, I guess, totally. With stand-up, you're like playing a single character. Because, I mean, like, let's be honest, like, not every stand-up person, the character they are on stage is who they are in life, right? So, they're creating this thing, but they maintain one character throughout.
Yes.
And it's like the difference between being comfortable and writing in one person's voice versus writing multiple people's voices. Like, maybe writing screenplays isn't there. They're, you know, forte, whatever, kind of thing. But I don't know. It's different. Since you're in both worlds, you've done projects with lots of different people. How do you find the vibe is different when you do a group project versus working on stand up on your own?
Yeah, that's honestly like it's such a weird one because I do miss. That's what I miss about when I'm doing stand up. That is what I miss about acting is that you're not part of a group or a company, and it is very lonely, especially like going from town to town and, you know, staying in hotels, and you're just sort of like, I love my own company, but, you know, you get to the point where you're a bit like, oh my God, like, it's just a bit like, oh my God, is this my life? Just like alone. But that's, you know, it's that whole, you know, that song, Tears of a Clown. Because it is like that. You're going about making people laugh, but you're just like sitting in your hotel room eating a pot noodle or something like you know, so it's like, is this funny? And so I think that's what I love about like doing an acting job is that you're with other people and you're sort of riffing off of each other and all that. So yeah, I feel like stand up can be really lonely. But on the flip side of that, if we're talking like about pure ego, being on stage by yourself as a stand-up, when you get a laugh or whatever, and you come off feeling amazing, you feel like Jesus Christ because you're like, it's all me.
Yeah, that's right.
So it is like, you know, I'm just being totally honest.
yeah why not, right? I mean, it's true. I mean, I've often thought that critically, to be totally honest with you, that, you know, the impetus of doing stand-up is a lot related to ego. But I don't know. I have a large ego, and yet, you know, I guess perhaps that's the thing. I'm scared of stand up. I did pretend stand up. I've said this to people before, and they're like, "What?" Mm. I went up and spoke to the audience that was my friends, a theater audience, and just talked to them because they were my friends, and they liked it because they were my friends. And that's all that happened. Course. Like, I didn't write jokes or work on it or get better or change or perform in front of other people. No. So I was like, I don't really consider of my course. Time of performing alone on stage with a microphone as stand up. It was very performance art in the way that being friends with a large crowd is, you know.
Yeah, it's good that they did like you. Can you imagine if they didn't? You'd need some new friends.
Sure. Sure. Well, no, that's me. I'm more comfortable in large groups. Like if I'm talking to 100 people at once, I'm much more at ease than one-on-one.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Totally.
It's just something about it. Like just something about the idea that it's like, well, I mean, probably ego. You're right. I mean, we were talking about the idea that it's like they're all looking at you. I like that. Look at me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also like, you know, I feel like it's like, hey, I need to communicate this to you guys. So why doesn't everyone just pay attention at once? Like it's sometimes it's a little stage managery of me.
Yeah.
I know that's not a word, but I'm making it up. You know, a little neurotic in that way. When you do,
like now that I have you all here.
Yeah. Oh, good. The door is locked. Thank you for paying attention. I have a lot to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh man, there's an election coming up here. I should totally take advantage of that. Make some sort of like decrees on comedy stages. Oh, goodness me. So you are we're talking about how you first got into stand-up through the theater. Did you continue to do theater shows and one-woman shows and whatnot after you sort of connected with stand-up, or did you stop doing that kind of stuff and focus on stand-up?
You know what? Like, honestly, I don't do theater at all. And that's not through my own choice. Like, I love theater. Theater was my first love. It was my first training. You know, I did youth theater. I don't know what they call it in the States, when it's like a, yeah, like a youth group, like, of, you know, to do theater. Yeah. And then I went, obviously went to drama school, and I did like loads of unpaid theater when I lived in London, just because I wanted to be on stage and all that. So I did like, I did whatever, you know?
Yeah, you but paid then your dues, when I came that's out, what that is.
You know, just like getting yourself out there and making friends and, you know, and so I absolutely love theater, but I don't do any theater now. And that's just because the theatre world, from what I've seen, from what I've experienced, is so, so snobby. They're not interested in me at all. Mm-hmm. And I do think maybe it's the fact that I do stand up as well, maybe puts them off. But it's just crazy, because I've done so much TV and like film work, and I don't know, I feel like a lot of people think that it'd be harder to get into TV and film than theatre, but I've found it the complete opposite. Honestly, I have.
Well, I think like theaters are, you're right, snobby, but I feel like the reason why is it's like, they're like, you need to commit your life to us. Like, this is it.
Yeah, like a cult.
Yeah. I mean, and also like, it's like community, you know, when they say community theater, it has a bad ring to it, but it's a community. Like, you are essentially saying, hi, I'm going to be part of this crowd. And if you are there sometimes and not there other times, they don't like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think
if
you're right.
You got good reasons or whatever. That's fine.
I've scratched my head. I've gone to so many auditions for theater over the years where I scratch my head, because I do think I'm like a really good like stage actress as well, but I just I've never really had any luck in that department.
Yeah, it's a family business.
They don't
business.
Really care. Like,
yeah.
They don't care what TV or film you've done. Like, whereas, you know, anyone else would be like, oh my God, that's cool. You've worked with, you know, this person, or you've done that film. Like, that's really cool and that's really impressive. But they're not impressed by that at all. It's just like a completely different world.
You know, the film chip is a rough one.
They don't want me.
Yeah.
Sorry, say that again.
The film chip on your shoulder is rough. Like, with theater people, like, there's a definite thing where they're like, oh, it doesn't matter what you've done over there. I'm talking about what you've done on stage. You're like, and if you don't have like six
totally.
Shakespeare under your belt, they're like, oh, I get it. You're not one of those.
Yeah.
What do they call what I do?
Like,
so I do improv, and they'll be like, avant-garde. Yeah, we're not really into that.
Totally. It's like in the film Birdman.
Yeah. Totally.
I it's my favorite film. I'm totally obsessed with it. And it's kind of that whole thing, isn't it? Because Michael Keaton's character is this like hugely successful like film franchise actor, and then later in life, you know, decides to do a really gritty, serious play, and everyone's like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
You know,
nobody
and
has
it's like he's
really
kind of got to earn his respect. You know, even though he's like this huge, massive film star, like the Edward Norton's character is like. Just like horrible to him. He's like, no, I'm a real actor, you're not. And it just shows you how snobby the theater world can be.
It's true. Yeah, it's wild.
It's
I think
crazy.
Every group likes to, I mean, here in Austin, there's a lot of improv, and then there's a big crowd of stand-up. And like, yeah, they get along because they do interchangeable shows sometimes, but there's definitely like the stand-up crowd is like, I don't have to take classes. It's like, hey man, we're taking classes because we're like into stuff. We're like into hanging out, meeting new people, learning some stuff. I don't know, like, why not? What's wrong
totally.
With that? And they're like,
totally.
It's fine, I learn at open mics. I'm like, listen, I know what you mean. Like, I get it, but like,
yeah, like different schools of thought.
It's like a different thing. But so...
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, it can be hard to do theater. The one thing I was actually going to suggest, because it could be fun, I did when I was, let's see, when I graduated drama school, that was probably much less fancy than your drama school and certainly did not teach me the life lessons yours did. But mine was all about Shakespeare, which is very unhelpful for life. But when I graduated, I moved to New York City and, you know, connected with you know, I worked at NYU. I was a stage manager for their students. So like when their students did plays, I was the stage manager. So that was fun. But my big connection with the theater world was through this theater festival called Williamstown Theater Festival. And it's in Western Massachusetts, and it's all film people doing theater. So it's like a handful of like really important like theater people. And then mostly like writers. So they do like half of the summer is like major important old school plays. And then the other half are like brand new plays by like Broadway playwrights and stuff like that. And the actors that come through are all like film people and theater people. And it's a like nice collection of people being nice to each other. I really enjoyed
it. Oh, that sounds real nice.
And when I first started, like that was my first experience. Right out of college, I went and did the internship in summer. And so I was like, this is it. This is the way. This is how the theater world works. And then I found out later that that was not the case. But, you know, so all I'm saying is the Haven exists. It's in the summertime. If you want to take a summer, check it out. But it's like nice, you know, it's like a cool, it's like, you know, and it's all like, it's like total movie summer stock. And but I don't mean movie, like there's movie stars there, but there are. But I mean, like, if you were to write a movie about like the awesomest summer stock, this would be it. It's just like, you know, I don't know. There's so much going on and there's like all sorts of stuff. And like Tech Week, there are like 3 days where everybody goes 24 hours a day and people take shifts and you're like making food for 500 people. It was great.
Oh my God.
I loved it. Right? Oh, so fun.
And that was in New York?
No, this is in Western Massachusetts, which is close enough to New York that I actually had to drive to New York City to pick up lumber. I'm in the forest, but I had to drive to New York City to pick up lumber.
Oh my God.
You know, so it was all New York people that just go to like to Williams College in this town called Williamstown. I think both named after the same person. And it's just a fun little, like, there's a big theater and a small theater and everybody's working on a play all at once. There's interns galore. Yeah. It's all done by interns and, you know, a solid staff of people. It's like solid camp. It was super great.
Yeah.
I've thought about going back there 100 more times. I'm like, how do I make my resume look like something they would say yes to now? But
totally.
Like, you know, because I don't do acting. I'd be like trying to be a stage manager or whatever. But like, you know, that idea, like, I like the idea that things worked out. But when I moved on, you're right. There's a lot of weirdness between the two groups.
Yeah. I know, and I don't know, I just find it strange because as well, like, I have been to drama school. It's not like I'm, like, I don't know, they sort of maybe treat me like a fraud or something. And
no,
I'm like,
I just like the way you're like, it's not like I'm like that guy.
You know? I'm like, I've committed my life to this. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? I've committed my full life to being an actress. Like, I'm not joking around. But I think there's just such a, but because I do stand up as well, so you say I'm not joking around, people are like, but you are.
That being said, though, it's a very, it could be a very lucrative creative path. Like, I don't think anyone should begrudge anyone anything. But then again, you know, I'm a little Pollyanna in the world of people who are like mad when somebody gets SNL or whatever, you know, like, and I don't mean the current crisis, but I just mean, like, there's people in town that when somebody gets an opportunity, they'll be like, oh, that girl, she doesn't deserve it. And it's like, who cares? Like,
I know.
Can't we be happy? Like, when somebody from Austin does something great, it makes Austin look cool. And then people look at us like, this is good.
No,
like,
I know. It's the same problem in Scotland. I think it's everywhere, isn't it? That sort of jealousy. And it's crazy because, funnily enough, you bring up SNL. Like, I love SNL. It's one of my dreams to host it one day. Yeah. And, you know, obviously all the drama at the moment with that guy, Shane Gillis, being fired before it's even, like, started. But what was crazy is when that was announced, like the three new cast members, a girl called Chloe Fineman was announced. And I was buzzing for her because I discovered her probably about 2 years ago. I was like sifting through like comedy videos on YouTube.
Nice.
Like SNL audition tapes and things like that. And I found this girl and I thought, oh my God, she's absolutely brilliant. And I was like sending her impression of Nicole Kidman to all my friends because it was so on point. It was so funny. And then when I saw the other day that she got SNL, I was buzzing for this girl. And I don't even know her, you know?
That's so great.
Like, it just shows you that, you know, that talent, you know, cream talent does rise to the top, you know? You just have to keep going, like, and keep persevering because, like, people will notice. Like, I'm this wee Scottish girl and I notice this girl, like, across the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then a couple of years later, SNL, man, they've cast her and it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's so great that you like found her online. I love that. I love when it's like, by the way, she's my favorite. I know. I also love that too. Like I always watch like commercials, and if I notice the same person in like two or three commercials, I'll be like, oh, you're doing it. Yeah, good job. Like, you know.
Yeah, like you are rich.
Yeah, and I don't even know who they are. There's no like IMDb for commercials, right? But I'll be like, oh, it's this girl, and then she has the shoes, and then she also does this. I love it, you know, like, and I just get excited for them
so much.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Some of them do. I've certainly had some that did not. So, you know, it works out. But again, if I'm seeing this, like the commercial, one of the girls was like, it must have been Australian because the product was Australian. And I was like, well, this is clearly an international commercial. And then I saw her again and I was like, dude, you're internationally famous. I'm just a girl in Texas who's looking at you twice. Like, that's great. I don't know.
Oh,
I get excited. And I like that you found this girl and now she's going to get to, and how fun. Like the fact that you followed her means that even if you weren't watching SNL before, you probably will catch her first season just to be like, oh,
I know.
What's she going to do?
I know.
Maybe
I know.
She'll do Nicole
Kidman.
It's
really crazy.
It's relevant.
I love how I'm like taking the credit for this girl as if like I personally discovered her. Like I saw this girl before SNL.
No, that's the beauty of the internet, man. Yeah. I love it. I mean, heck, that's how I connected with you. I saw you do comedy online and then I was like, well, let me see if I can connect. Like,
the internet has changed everything, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that like we just were like, hey, you want to talk? And now we're talking, like, that's crazy.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know, it is pretty damn cool, isn't it?
Yeah. But like, and also we can try to spread a little bit of the positivity where it's like, I saw you and you were funny and great. And now I want other people to see you. And so in my random section of the world, I'd love to share your stuff. So that's why, that's, I guess, another reason why I do the podcast, because I am excited for people doing things and I want them to be, you know, I want people to see them and to hear what adventures they're on. So other than sad hotel rooms, tell me about the happy good things about doing a stand-up tour.
The happy thing.
Yeah. What? How many cities have you done and do you like travel a lot?
Oh, wow. God, I wish I could. I don't know. I don't know how many I've done, but I've done quite a lot. Like in the UK, I've done like most places in Scotland. And I'm kind of like starting to cover more places in England now. Obviously, the UK is tiny compared to America, but like the comedy scene's pretty strong. So there's a lot of places to be kind of gigging. But that's like my next dream is to like be able to like tour America. That would just be that would be, because I love America so much. Since I was a little girl. Again, I've like I believe in the American dream probably more than some Americans do. I'm completely obsessed with it, and I just love America. Like I go to America probably at least once a year. I've been to LA 6 times. I've been to New York like 4 times, or maybe 5 times. You know, I just love America so much. I love the food.
I mean, everyone knows the food in the UK sucks.
Sorry, say that again.
Have you only just been to those 2 cities?
Oh, no, where else have I been? I've been to Las Vegas. I've been to I know, God, now I just sound like
No, I was just thinking, like, I was just like, have you ever seen any of the weird parts? Like, I was like, New York and LA, there are high representations. They're good. Yeah. I was like, they're the best of us. You know, we're not really. Do you go towards the middle? It's real crazy. I mean, I live in Austin, Texas, which is a speck in the middle of insanity. And so, you know, who knows?
I'm hoping to come to Texas soon because I have a friend and her family stay in Houston.
Nice. Houston's a great comedy town.
She goes there every Christmas. And so I'm thinking about going to like to her place for like maybe a week before Christmas this year. Because I'd love to go to Texas, man. I'd love to go.
Yeah. You'd be lucky if you have Austin. A hot Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
The last 2 years it's been warm. Remember Christmas Day, we were like, oh, man, why is it going to be 80?
I know.
Like, it was so hot.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, you wouldn't get that problem in Scotland. ever.
It's just a hot place. Oh,
totally.
Man. So you're going to all sorts of clubs in and around Scotland and England, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Are you, do you have, like, and this is like just because I'm interested as a like, hey, this is something that's you can do. And I don't know. Do you have like a manager and like an agent that give you stand up help? Or do you have an acting agent? Like, how do you, after drama school and the like subsequent rejection from the terrible community theaters who are going to regret it, what about, how did you get into films and how did you get like an agent and that kind of stuff?
So I've had quite a few agents throughout my career, as obviously most like creatives do. You know, it takes a while to find the right one or whatever. So I have been with a few agents, like even since drama school, I'm on like my third agent since leaving there, and that was like 4 years ago. But I'm like really, really happy with my agency now. They're like a really big deal. They like represent some really big, like really big actors and stuff, and they're really cool. So they take care of my like my acting side of things. But then recently I met with like a comedy manager and he's like starting to get me like stand-up gigs now as well. So I feel like it's really good. Like the first time in my life I've kind of got like everything like covered.
Yeah.
Whereas before when I was like in between agents and stuff, I was kind of, and I still do. The thing about like who was I telling this to recently? Like, see, like, obviously when you've got an acting agent, they get you all your, like, acting auditions and stuff, and so you're loyal to them. You don't deal with any other agents, right? But stand-up's different. Stand-up, you can kind of get bookings from lots of different promoters and stuff. You don't just have to have, like, one agent, if that makes sense. Mm. You can kind of, you know. So with stand-up, I still get a lot of my own work as well. But now I've got this guy who's brilliant. He's a brilliant comedy agent. So he's starting to get me like more stand-up work. So that's kind of how that works.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It is weird. It is weird that like with acting, it's like a more kind of loyal. There's more of a like a loyalty with your agent. But with stand-up, it's kind of like, hey, who's ever going to give me a gig? I'll take it.
Huh. Yeah. It is interesting, you know? That the different. Like it's always interesting to me too. I've heard like managers for comedy, and I wonder how all that business stuff kind of works, because like I'm always like, you're right, you can get gigs on your own and figure that kind of stuff out, but like how does this one other person get the connections? And I don't know, I'm fascinated. I love to talk to a manager or like somebody like that, where it's like, what do you, tell me what you do. Like, tell me how it works and like,
exactly.
What you, do you just spend all day like just chatting with people? And then you're like, you know, who'd be cool for you? You know, who you'd like, is that literally your life? Like, and maybe it is, and that's awesome, I guess, if that's what you're into.
Yeah.
But it's just like, wow, like so super interesting. Like I just,
totally.
You know, I mean like even my husband and I have connected with some people who are like, hey, we can help you get people on your show. And I was like, yeah, great. Whatever. Give me a name. I will happily call, people. Like, I'm just interested in people. So I'll take, I'm interested in whoever. You got people that want to talk? I'm into it. I just think it's so fascinating to hear different ways people get into it and how it works. It's also very fascinating to me that, like, you're just starting with the comedy manager and, like, how that will affect you. And I wonder how, you know, hopefully I can talk to you in the future about, like, you know, what else goes on. Now, you do a lot of film. How does you do a lot of film through your agent? How many films have you done, and, like, how is that for you? Like, do you like film acting? I feel like drama school is probably more theatery.
Yeah, like, film is my favorite medium. Like, so it's my favorite thing to watch. It's my favorite thing to do. So, you know, again, since I was a little girl, I was just like, I want to be in movies. That was, like, my goal. I didn't think about TV or theater, you know, when you're really little. It was just like, I want to be in movies. And I just love it so much. I think there's a real buzz being on a film set. And I've done, like, mainly independent films. I haven't done, like, some, you know, big budget, like, film yet. But the independent films, like, any film, like, being on a film set is a buzz, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter the budget or who's producing it or whatever. It's just, like, because, like, the little girl in me is, like, screaming. She's like, oh, my God, like, you did it.
Yeah.
Like, you're on a film set. So yeah. I'm, like, I just love it. I love it, love it, love it. So, That's my, I think that's my biggest passion, because I just love watching films since I was little. Like, I was, you know, especially my adolescence, you know, when you're just a bit of a nightmare, you're turning into an adult and you kind of don't know what the hell is going on in your brain. I used to just sit and watch, you know, God, it was VHS before it was DVD, you know. I would just watch. Oh, my God. That's how I spent my teenage years, just watching movies. So, I can't even remember what the question is. I'm just like, film.
No, we're talking about how much you love film. It makes sense.
Yeah. I know, you would hope so, right? Like, if I was just like, oh, God, no, I can't really be off. I love film.
Well, you know what, though? I find that a lot of people, especially I've heard in other interview shows, people talking about how, like, if you work in comedy, you probably avoid comedy movies and comedy TV shows. Like, and I realize I do that. Like, I really, if a show's really going to have to win me over, like a sitcom or something, like, I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. I'm not watching that show. But there has to be some part of it that really, like, gets me, you know? And, like, you know, I watch some terrible ones because I love the people in them. I'll be like, oh, but you know what? He's great. Let's watch it. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it's a lot of it's because it's like I'm watching it with this clinical eye. Like, I'm like following the joke and like tracing out the three beats. And I'm like, okay, what's happening here? How this kid's involved? All right. This is how, you know, I'm literally watching it as if I'm like, I can deconstruct the whole thing as it's happening.
Of course. Yeah, it's like, you know, technically watching it rather than just enjoying it.
Yeah. So now that you know how film is made, does it ruin films for you when you watch them?
No. I mean, I do understand what you're saying. Like, and I've probably even made my boyfriend a bit more critical of, like, things. Like, we'll be watching things and I can be maybe critical about the acting or the lighting or the cinematography, or equally like, oh my God, that shot was amazing. Let's rewind it to watch that shot again.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, can't we just watch the film? But I'm like, oh my God, because I'm just like so obsessed. So I kind of know what you mean. But I don't know, it's just such a buzz. I just think films are, and I know people are saying films are dying a little bit because obviously things like Netflix and Amazon Prime and everything and movie stars are moving to TV and all that now. And as much as I hear that, I don't, like, accept it. I'm like, no, man. Like, no one's taking films away from us, man. Like, film is so, like, vital, man. Like, without films, what have we got?
Sometimes,
you know, even though I love TV, don't get me wrong.
I mean, that being said, though, I really feel like some of those platforms are making good films. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are lots of good movies where, it wasn't in the movie theater, but boy, I enjoyed watching it. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah, 100%. I don't think Netflix or all these other platforms are intending to kill off anything. They're just, obviously, they're making a lot of money from what they're doing. But yeah, these, like, Netflix original shows and films are incredible as well. So,
Plus, some of them are very cinematic, you know?
Oh, totally. And but I still think nothing beats going to the cinema. Nothing beats that.
Yeah, I wonder if the fact that we're losing that has more to do with our sort of technological, like you know, with our phones and all the everything we can have at home, you know, it makes us totally. Less likely to want to go to a room together and share something.
Yeah.
Also, and I don't know if this happens, you know, near you, but there's a lot of disrespect that happens in movie theaters now. Like, my husband and I will only go at, like, crazy early morning. Like, we go drop the baby off at daycare at, like, 9 a.m. so we can go to a 10 a.m. viewing of a movie so no one else is there. Because if there's people there, people are talking and they're on their phone and there's, like, action happening. And you're like, what? No.
I know.
You know?
I agree.
And
I know. I'm, like, a hard ass. When I go to the cinema, like, people are talking and, you know, eating their popcorn really loudly and texting and all this. I'm like, oh my God, it's like the most infuriating thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I have a hard time with the movies and why I usually end up watching it at home. It's like at home, everything can be silent around me and I can be deeply embedded in the like emotional journey that I'm on. Like, whereas in the movies, I'm always worried that there's going to be some weird person or like a fight or like there's a man discussing how he likes tuna fish sandwiches way too loud, like all sorts of
you're
stuff.
Like stop it, god damn it, stop it.
It's a lot of that. I know. I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of collecting together. I love film festivals because I feel like when you go to that, it's like we've all agreed we like this stuff and let's be super respectful to it. And then, you know.
I agree. I completely agree. Film festivals are the best.
Yeah.
Like just real lovers of film and just, people who want to completely be immersed in it. It's like the best.
Do you have any like friends in the film world that you like make movies with on the regs, or like did you happen upon finding people that you like working with through auditions? Like, how are you finding the work, or is there like people that you know that are making movies so you're like in it with them, or how does that work for you?
It's kind of it's sort of like, you know, like with any world, you sort of you're sort of blind going into it. So I've done a few films now, and like I said, they're all like independent, like low budget films, but they've just been so much fun to do. And I've made friends from it and people that you want to work with again. And then I had a friend who was making her like directorial debut, and she cast me in it, which was amazing. And that was so much fun, like working with a friend, but also like, you know, like working together. It's like the most fun thing ever, like combining like friendship and movie making. You know,
Been
like a pure cheese ball, but it's true. So, and then
great.
Like every project I've done, I've made friends, I've learned something, and I just love it, man. I just love film so much.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you making
that's
any
like
of
my
your own?
Oh, sorry, go on. Well, interestingly enough, I'm writing a feature film at the moment.
Great.
So that's like one of my ambitions, but it is like, I'm not trying to sound negative, but it's so hard to get a film made, even an independent film.
Yeah.
So my kind of ambition is to just kind of like, that's why I'm writing so many different things. I've got a sitcom in development, feature film, a mockumentary, a play. Like I've got all these things in development, and I'm just hoping that like one day I'll be big enough that people kind of come to me and they're like, have you got anything you want to make? You know, that way. And I'll be like, yeah, I've got this, I've got that. Like I'll have all these things just ready to be made.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, I'm hustling and working on all these things now so that when the time comes, I've got them all ready.
Plus, to your drama school's credit, you have kept yourself busy in times when there aren't people saying, hey, we would like to buy your
100%
movies, but you are still working and creating and probably learning in the process. I was actually going to ask if you were writing your first screenplay or if you had done multiple, but it sounds like you've done this a bunch. And I think that it's important to like do a couple, you know, like they say write one and then let it go because that was your first chance. That was your first draft. Like that was you figuring it out. And then it's like, okay, now write something and it might be a little bit better based on what you learned from that.
Of course.
Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. So how many like you said you have a few going. What is there any project that you're like, and you don't have to share anything, you know, like, no, you don't have to like share with the world anything you don't want to share or whatever. But is there any one writing project that you're working on that's like totally exciting to you? That's your like big thing that you're thinking about all the time right now?
Yeah, actually, I probably would say the feature film, just because I have it really, really clear in my head. And obviously, I won't say too much at the moment, but it's a horror film because horror is my favorite genre. I'm completely obsessed with horror.
Great.
Yeah, it's kind of what you were saying. You know how you were like being in comedy, it can make you like hypercritical, like and hypersensitive. And it's funny that because obviously my job, I'm constantly going to different cities, making people laugh, like, you know, all that kind of thing. So then I go home and I'm like, right, I want to see people get slaughtered, put on like Saw 5 or whatever. I'm like, and that's what I mean. I watch any horror. I watch good horror. I watch crap horror. I just watch any horror. I'm like a horror geek.
You know, it's funny, and I hope this doesn't ruin it for you, but I took a class in it for writing like a series, and the teacher actually mentioned that the rhythm of comedy and the rhythm of horror are both very similar. So
yes, I heard that too. Yeah.
So hey, sounds like you got it. Yeah, I think it's because there's a lot of like tension building and then breaking it. Whereas like it's like the idea of the benign violation, and then in horror it's not so benign. So
Yeah, totally. And then obviously you can combine the two and have like comedy horror, which is so satisfying.
It really is. Yeah, so, my favorite thing is to make people react in a way they don't want to react. Like I really love that.
Kind of pull the rug from under them.
Yeah. That's my, that's definitely something that I like to do. For anyone who's ever been in a show with me, I can guarantee they would agree. I'm always like, oh, okay. So then let's do this other crazy thing. And they'll be like, what? How dare you do that to this character in like, the show? And like, then we kill him. Totally. And it's like, oh, what? Like, I can't tell you the number of shows where I've killed off everyone in the show before the end of it. And they're like, what? This is a comedy show. And I was like, yeah.
You're like, exactly.
Exactly. Oh, that's so awesome. Are you super into horror? Do you have like a favorite horror film?
Yeah, like, so I've got a few different, because obviously even within horror, there's like different genres within horror. So like I've got a favorite psychological horror, I've got a favorite slasher horror, I've got, you know what I mean? I've got like different, so my favorite like comedy horror slasher films, obviously Scream.
Nice.
Because it's just the best. And obviously Wes Craven just like kind of changed the whole horror genre, and I just love that film so much.
Yeah.
And when I was younger, because obviously when it came out like 96 or whatever, so when I first watched it, I was super young. And so I just thought it was scary. I didn't see the comedy in it. And then I watched it again recently as an adult, and I was like, oh my God, this is so funny.
Yeah.
You know, even though it is still really scary as well, like really, really scary bits, but it was so funny. And like when you're a kid, you don't really get the humor in it. You're just like, oh my God, he's got a knife.
Yeah. You know? Also, you know, you're not as dark as you are when you're older. You know, as a child, you haven't, nobody's like been terrible to you too many times where you're like, well, that's just something that happens. Or where you're like, yeah, he deserved it. You know, that kind of thing. You're never like, that's right. If an 8-year-old said that, I'd be more like, oh, okay, we're going to the child psychologist. But yeah, but 38, yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Screw that.
I know.
Oh, man.
Totally.
Oh, whenever I'm watching horror, I'm like yelling at the screen. I'm always like, kill him. It's crazy. It's not good.
Yeah. Like, I've got a joke in my stand-up where I talk about, because you know the guy who plays the killer in the first Scream, C. Ulrich, who plays, like, Billy? Yeah. And he's, like, Sydney's really hot boyfriend. And I fancy him so much. Like, he's, like, my biggest celebrity crush. and, like, I have like a joke in my stand up where I'm like, oh my God, like Sydney got it all wrong. Like, why is she phoning the police on him? Like, I'm like, at the end, all my friends could be dead around me, but I just wanted to make sure me and him were okay. Like, I just fancy him so much.
No, that's a horror comedy film. A girl who just wants this guy's attention so she kills everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, like, hey, but do you fancy me yet? Like, what do I have to do to get your attention,
man? Do I go out or maybe, like, when I get out of jail, will you visit me in jail? It's going to be great.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Oh my God. You know what's funny? I've actually noticed in a couple of shows that I've watched recently that, you know, they'll use actors who, you know, you see, and you, when you immediately see them, you have a sort of warm feeling, like a nice, like, oh, that person's nice. Oh, look at how attractive and nice they are. And then this character that they're playing is like evil and terrible. And you're like, oh, I'm shocked. How can he be both handsome and evil? I don't understand. Like, so funny how like the choice of certain people in roles will be, I'm sure, for that reason, where it's like the audience will never suspect him because look at him. The end of story.
Of course.
So then it's like, of course, you know, we're immediately like hurt by our own prejudices. Like, I'm like, totally. Attractive people don't do crimes. Turns out they do.
Yeah.
Turns out. Yeah.
Sorry, they absolutely can. 100%. I know, because he, obviously, he was cast by Wes Craven because he was so gorgeous. Like, you know, he was compared to like Johnny Depp, you know, and this sort of gorgeous man. And so at the start, when he comes into Sydney's window, like, you're like, oh my God, like, what a dreamboat. Like, you're meant to fancy him, you know?
Yeah.
So that by the end, you're like, oh my God, you feel like betrayed by your own, you know, but kind of turned on as well.
Yeah, well, you know, as soon as you realize you're wrong. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's so funny. Oh, man. I'm so glad that you're writing. That's such an interesting thing. Did you, like, when you started writing, did you write in school? Like, did they teach you, you know, methodology or, like, how to do stuff? Or did you, like, you know, watch Scream and, like, take notes and figure out how to write it? Or have you, like, read a book on how to, how'd you figure it out? Or are you figuring it out as we speak?
Yeah, I'm definitely figuring it out as we speak because I've never written a film before. I don't really know what I'm doing, like, at all. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I do. I know what I like and I know, like, the kind of films, you know, that I like and the kind of scripts that I like. So I'm just, I mean, like I say, it's like my first draft, but I've got the story. I've got all the ideas and all the images in my head that's really, really clear. So now I'm just trying to actually write the screenplay. So it's like a complete work in progress. But it is like something, I think it's a really, really good idea. So I'm just trying to like figure it all out because obviously every medium is different. Like I know how to like write a stand-up show. I kind of understand how to write a sitcom. But I'm like really like writing a film, writing a screenplay is like a completely different thing for me. So I'm like, yeah, kind of just dipping my toes in at the moment and sort of try to figure it out.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
It's so crazy too because screenplays have so much like, you know, there's so much specific like, you know, format and stuff. And I always get like overwhelmed by that. Like I'll be like in it for the story and I'm working on stuff. And then all of a sudden I get like bogged down in like, what should I call this? Is this an action or what? And I'm like, okay, stop. Like, just who cares? Write it first.
Yeah.
Write it in like on a piece of paper. Who cares? Like, don't.
Yeah, just get it down.
I get so obsessed. Like, in the middle, I'm like in the second scene, and I'm like trying to format it. And it's like, leave it alone. Who cares what it looks like? Like, you know, yeah, I get so thrown off by that.
Get it down.
It's my like. Yeah, it's like my blessing and my curse. I'm really good at organizing, but I'm also like obsessed with organizing. So, that's what caught me when I was doing the screenplay. Is you writing right now, is that the like thing that you're most excited about in your creative life? Or do you have an upcoming stand-up show that you're excited about? Is there anything else you're working on that you wanted to share?
Yeah, so basically my new stand-up show is called Slutty Little Goldfish. And it's all about Time's Up and Me Too and Harvey Weinstein and all these like huge, crazy topics that have affected like our industry for years and years. But I've been so determined to not make it like a TED Talk because I'm like, it's a stand-up show, it's got to be funny. Even though I'm dealing with like really heavy issues, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been trying to, that was probably my biggest obstacle in writing the show was that when I was testing it out, you know, I was doing bits of it in different, not countries, different cities. I was finding like some audiences were really like with me And some audiences were just like not laughing at all. And I was like, oh my God, this is because it's not funny yet. Like, as simple as that. Like, audiences will always tell you very honestly if something's funny or not. And I was like, because I was like, oh my God, this just sounds like a TED Talk.
Yeah.
So, like a good TED Talk, don't get me wrong. I was like proud of my like writing and my themes, but I hadn't found the jokes yet. So I was like, right, I really need to make this funnier. So I feel like I've succeeded now. I've just done a short run at the Edinburgh Fringe with it, and it went really, really well. I got a lovely review, and the audiences were really liking it. And I was like, okay, I've got this show now that's like, I think is funny. But it's really controversial. Like, not that I'm trying to compare myself to Dave Chappelle by any means, because he's like, you know, one of the like greatest stand-ups in the world, but like there's similar
and
themes in terms of this whole... Sorry?
And deeply controversial.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just, you know this whole cancel culture that comedians are experiencing at the moment? You know, we were talking about Shane Gillis earlier, the SNL guy who's been fired, and he's been cancelled before he's even, like, famous, you know? And you're like, oh my God, how's he being cancelled?
Oh, is like, that what that means? I've heard the phrase. I never knew what it meant. What does it mean? Cancel culture.
What, to be cancelled?
Like the cancel culture. So what does that mean? I've heard it, but I don't know.
Cancel culture, especially now, most like comedians are like, obviously everyone's, you know, like when Harvey Weinstein was found out, people were like, oh my God, he's cancelled now. You see what I mean? Kevin Spacey was called out. People were like, oh yeah, he's cancelled. So it started off with like what seemed like a good thing. You were like, okay, these monsters are getting cancelled. That's good. But then, like, this sort of crazy generation, like you know, like social media has got obviously really good things about it. Like you're saying, like we found each other on social media. But then social media is also like canceling people for like jokes that they made 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Kevin Hart like wasn't allowed to host the Oscars because he'd made homophobic jokes 10 years ago that he'd already apologized for like many, many times.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like this unforgiving culture that's really gross, you know?
Yeah. I hear you.
And especially comedians, that's their whole job, is to make jokes. Like, so obviously that sometimes they're not going to be funny, sometimes they are going to be offensive. And I don't know, so it's quite scary, this cancelling culture. So
is that
I've got some jokes about that.
Is that... So that's happening to you guys too? I'm not going to lie. I legitimately thought it was a U.S. thing. I thought we were just in a terrible time and everybody was super negative because of stuff. Not even going to go into it. But like, you know, it felt very much like, wow, the U.S. is just being a dick to everyone all the time.
Yeah.
And so everyone's mad. And so we're just like, forget it. None of them. I can't play. No one can play. And I thought it was just us, but you're telling me
God,
that it's
no.
Oh, okay, shit, that's not
good. Yeah, and the UK, because you know the UK is basically like America's little brother. Like, we're so obsessed with you guys.
Oh,
it's like
so
we're always trying to suck up to you. So if America does it, we'll try and do it. You know.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the UK is terrible for like trying to cancel people at the moment, like for jokes or comments or, and I don't know. It's quite a scary time, especially for comedians. Like, people are saying, oh my God, are we going to even have jobs left? Like, that's our whole job, is to try and be funny. And even if you don't find something funny, that's fine. But don't try and fucking, like, cancel my whole career because you don't think I'm funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. It's scary. And I'm not saying, like, I haven't heard what Shane Gillis said yet. I haven't listened to the podcast yet. So I can't, like, speak for him. But I just know that we're living in a scary time if comedians are getting cancelled for jokes.
Yeah, you know what's funny, I think, is that we didn't need it to be viral that this happened. Legitimately, in my mind, from a business point of view, I don't think the SNL people did their jobs properly. Like, you guys didn't go through every bit of social media for everyone that comes on. If you don't, you're remiss. Like, you're the number one location. Like, you cannot be like, yeah, I checked his Instagram. No, you got to check everything. Like,
yeah, 100%.
I mean, I thought about it myself. I was like, oh, shit, have I ever said anything that's like untoward? Like, I'm sure.
Of course,
but
we're all
you know, it's like, oh God, what do I need to go through my podcast and make sure that like I didn't say anything? But that being said, when I heard the like sort of level of racial slurs that were happening, I was like, okay, well, I've never said that. But it, at the same time, it's like, why is it, you're right that, why is it that I am now on my little like moral high horse? Because I'm like, well, I'm better than that guy. Like, no, we shouldn't be just deciding that over one thing that you do, you shouldn't allow to do it. That being said, with reference to this guy, he responded badly too. It didn't work out. Yeah. It was never nice. But you know, a lot of people have tried to get back in and, you know, I don't know if they've succeeded. It's a super weird situation. And it's hard because the internet, you know, everything's forever. You know what I mean? You put something up
completely
and, you know, you can look at stuff forever. I thank God every day that I didn't get on Facebook until I was 30. I was like, oh, yes.
I know. Like, I know exactly what you mean by that.
Everything under 30 was not something I needed public at all.
Yeah.
Like, totally. No, thank you. But there's even things that I think about, like ex-boyfriends and stuff, where like I have like a photo album that's like me and this ex-boyfriend and I'm like married now. And I'm like, yeah, I should probably get rid of that. Like, you know, just things where it's like you don't think about it. Like, I don't think about it. He doesn't think about it. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's like, oh, what's happening? Like, you know, or whatever.
Of course.
But what if they did? You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's been a super scrutinized thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a scary time, but I'm hoping that like good will come out of it. Like, obviously, you know, we all want to be good people. You know, we don't want to be assholes. That's, you know, but it's just scary that you could make a joke, so it's something that you don't even mean. I'm not talking about anyone else right now. I'm just talking about myself. That I could say something that I genuinely just mean as a joke, and then I'm fired, and that's it. Like, my career's over. And you're just like, oh my God, I made a joke. Like, that's terrifying, isn't it? Like, if we're going to come to that point.
Yeah. Well, not only fired, so but like essentially, you know, that's it. Like, I can't imagine that kid's doing much else. He's not having a comedy career. You know what I mean?
Although, in saying that, my boyfriend said that apparently a lot of big comedians have been coming out like in support of him. saying just how kind of crazy it is to be cancelled so early in your career when you're still trying to find your feet and you're trying to find your voice and so in a way it could help him, you know, it could help him because he's kind of reached a level of fame now with all this controversy that, you know, could perhaps help him. So I suppose it's too early to say right now like how it's going to be for that guy.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, he's a victim of the culture no matter what, but regardless, like, I think about, you know, how art reacts to the world that it's in and how I remember when Trump got elected, a bunch of us were going out to have drinks and we just kept saying like, guys, the art's going to be great. The art is going to be so great. Like, and that's the only thing that we could get through. Like, we were like, just when there is opposition, art always comes through. Like, this is what we're going to do, guys. And that's like where I come from when I think about stuff. And I think it's interesting, like you said, that there's this group of comedians who are like, hey, let's support this artist on his journey. Yeah, he made a mistake and he can learn from that. So let's not, like, just, as you said, cancel him.
Banish him from like society almost. You're never allowed to talk again.
I feel like it's the artists who are bringing it back though, like allowing us to do it, and it will eventually get there, and hopefully, you know, part of what you're putting out there with your stand-up show will help convince people too, like, let's be a little bit, if we want to be empathetic, we need to be empathetic to everyone. It can't just be like, this person's dying, let's be empathetic to them. This person's living in a war zone, let's be empathetic to them. Also, this guy's a jerk to everyone he's ever met. Let's be empathetic to him. What a terrible life he has. Oof, meanie. Nobody likes
totally.
It. What? That's terrible. I was listening to this podcast recently where they're talking about how we are all in control of like the way that we view the world, and like you get to choose whether you view the world positively or negatively. And so they ask this question where they say like, do you think people in the world, do you think people are doing their best? And if you say, yes, I think people are doing their best, then you have sort of a positive outlook on the world and it's easier to navigate. Whereas if you're like, no, I don't think people are doing their best, I think they need to work harder, like, you then have a negative view of the way, and then everything is going to be shaded by that. And it was such an interesting, like the fact that we get to decide the way we look at the world. Like, we can decide, and that whether or not it's true or not true doesn't matter, because my world is almost, to bring it back to the ego conversation we had earlier, but like, my world is just me and the way that I see it. Right. And so if I decide that I'm going to give everyone the benefit of the doubt and feel like people are kind of okay no matter what, even if they're terrible and it's like, oh, he's just having a hard day, like that's going to make me better than if I were to, you know, just immediately be like, this guy's a jerk. He's a jerk. He doesn't care about anybody. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think that sometimes. And I'm trying to, after I heard that podcast, I was like, I got to fix it. And I feel like a lot of it has to do with this cancel culture world that we're in, this sort of negativity, this like judgment of each other, this like, I'm better than you. I mean, I'm from Boston originally, and I don't know if you know anything about Boston, but the motto is, you think you're better than me? That's it. Like, so I've been angry my whole life, right? And I fight it, but I try to be positive when it comes to like other human beings. I know that I just said a bunch of things, but I want to bring it back to your comedy, which is, we are talking about this because of the stand-up show that you have been working on. When and you said that you adjusted it so that it would be less TED Talky. But tell me, like, do you think in the revisions that you've made and the time that you spent at Edinburgh Fringe, do you think that you've found now the sweet spot between talking to people about a serious subject and entertaining them?
Yeah, I do, generally speaking. But as any comedian will tell you, like, you just never know, because you never know what the audience is going to be like. You never know how the audience is going to respond to it. So you could feel like you've got this really slick show that's exactly what you say, kind of, you know, a serious subject matter, but funny. And then you could just hit the wrong note from the start, or the audience just might not take to you, because that's a thing. A group energy is such a mental thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, because I did 7 shows at the Fringe, and I'd say about 5 out of the 7 of them went really, really well. And then one was maybe a bit ropey. And then there was one night that was just awful. It was like a car crash. And you can't stop because, you know, the show started. You have to keep going no matter what. And the crowd were just like, just not enjoying it at all, not enjoying me. And any stand-up will tell you it's the worst feeling in the entire world, because you're like, oh my God, this hour is going to be the longest hour of my goddamn life. And it's just so hard. So that's what I mean. Like, it's such a, that's what's so crazy about stand-up, man. Like, you could really feel like you're in a really sweet place and you've got a really well-written show and you're really confident and really happy with it. And then boom, you could go out there and the audience could hate you from the minute you open your mouth and there's nothing you can do about it. So do you see what I mean? It's such a hard question to answer because I feel like you can never, ever, ever feel confident as a stand-up, because you never know what you're going to receive when you go into a certain room.
Do you feel like your projects are all always ever evolving, though? Like, if you have it mostly down, it's pretty well together. But if you go to a place and they're not, you know, vibing with certain stuff, do you adjust, or do you just barrel through with your message?
Such a good question. You know, it's such a good question, because again, it depends. Like, sometimes you do just barrel through, because you're like, right, you know, it's like being at work, you know, you're having a bad day at the office and you just think, oh, well, I'm here now, got to get through it, you know, and just get, you know, count down the hours, count down, you know. So sometimes you just battle through it. And then other times, depending on how you're feeling, you might think, you know what, I am going to make it my mission to make you like me. I am going to do anything within my power. And so you can start to kind of play around, maybe, and maybe change things. Or, but I'm in kind of a different, I'm in a sort of school of thought where I'm like, it's kind of like the whole Twitter canceling everyone and all that. I'm kind of like, you can't make anyone like you. You just can't. You can try, but it's a waste of time. So I don't want to like adjust my work too much, you know. If a yeah. certain audience aren't enjoying me, I'm kind of like, well, you know what?
It's okay.
I've got your money now. You're here. And I'm just going to do my show because I love it.
Well, I mean, any bit of entertainment is, for any audience member, it's always like a crapshoot and you have to be open to that. Like, you don't go to a movie you don't like and then ask for the money back. Like, it's like, yeah, sorry,
you kind of,
man.
You know, you just accept. Yeah, you accept it. You kind of go, well, that wasn't for me. Didn't enjoy it, but fine.
Yeah.
But then another thing that's crazy is some audiences will act like they hate you, right? Like, they won't laugh. They won't smile. They, you know, they just sit there in silence for an hour and you're sitting, you know, you're feeling suicidal, like it's the worst. And then at the end, they'll all shake your hand and tell you how much they loved you and how much they enjoyed the show. And you're thinking, what? No. Like, you're thinking, like, no way. So that's what I mean. Like, audiences can be so weird and they can make you feel so insecure, but they don't even know they're doing it. They just might be so invested in the story that they're just listening, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So, but you're sort of like, oh my God, this isn't a play. This is meant to be funny. Like, you're meant to laugh, but every audience is different. So I think I'm trying at the moment to coach myself on how to be more secure when I'm like doing a show that's not like how I perceive to be going well. Because my boyfriend, he's quite good for me in that way, because he came to see the last night of the show. And it was a sort of ropey one where the audience were laughing, but they weren't like rolling about the floor, you know. It wasn't like one that's making you feel brilliant. Right. And there was bits that felt a bit awkward, you know, like with bits where I'd go and have a little swig of my Coke, and it was like, oh, it's just complete silence. And I was like, oh God. And then at the end, my boyfriend was like, oh, that was great. And you know, he really enjoyed it. And like the audience were saying, they really enjoyed it on the way out and stuff. Because I always like do a meet and greet at the end. I like to shake people's hand and speak to them. And, you know, and I was just like, and Michael, my boyfriend, was like, but Rachel, like, honestly, like, they were enjoying it. They just weren't like what you sort of typically expect to get, you know? So I'm just trying my hardest at the moment to coach myself at being more positive, because otherwise you could just go down a horrible rabbit hole of insecurity and fear and paranoia. And like, any stand-up will tell you that, like, when you feel like you're dying, it's the worst thing in the world. But
I think that
it's not necessarily how the audience are finding it, you know.
Sometimes I think that that's the difference between the stand-up and the one-person show, though, is that stand-ups are so reliant on the audience reaction. Like, they're, like, listening and adjusting, and they can feel every laugh and every silence. But, like, how many one-person shows have you done in your life where, like, silence was exactly what you wanted? Where, like, you wanted them to be like, what? Like, they're totally into you in that moment, and you're like, yeah, that's
exactly
right. Nobody's talking. I get it. Like,
exactly.
And it's like just sort of a different way of doing it. So, I mean, the reason why I pointed out is you were like, how do I coach myself? You've done this before. You now just have to think of this particular show as a one-woman show, as different than stand-up. Like, because when you do stand-up, like, you're right, you're listening for the crowd, it's this, whereas this seems more like a play that you are performing that has a point and it has something to say, you know what I mean? Like, if you were just like, yeah, guys, whatever, farts, like, that would be fine, but that would be comedy, and just for comedy's sake, as opposed to now where it's like, okay, I'm gonna make you laugh, but now that you like me, real talk, let's be nice to women, okay? Like, there's a lot of, but there's a lot of, it's kind of like I was talking about me earlier, where I get a crowd and I'm like, now that I have you, let me tell you what I think.
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that could help in some way anyway, because you've done it.
No,
this is something that you have in your, you know, wheelhouse.
Yeah. But it's just, I suppose it's hard when you're up there. It's like, it's easy to think that afterwards you can kind of think, oh no, they were just really invested. And look, it is quite a heavy subject matter, you know, talking about rape and harassment and you know, how dark Hollywood can be and all this stuff. But because of other nights I've done it where people have been laughing so much that you kind of just get used to that and you're like, brilliant, I've got a really funny show. And then when they're pure silent and you're talking about rape, And you're like, oh my God, I'm back to the TED Talks thing again, where I'm thinking this isn't funny because they're not making it feel funny. But then, like, my boyfriend said afterwards, he was like, no, it's brilliant. He's like, but it is. He's like, it is heavy. Like, it's a heavy show.
Yeah.
So it's not, you're not always going to get audiences that are just sitting laughing the whole time. And again, it's just being more secure and kind of going, that's okay. Like, that's actually okay. I'm secure enough to know that that's all right. Like, that there's different ways of showing enjoyment. And like you say, oh my God, doing a one woman show where it's silent, like, that's the best thing. Cause you're like, oh my God, they're listening. This is brilliant. So I guess it's just trying to have the same confidence as a stand up that not everything has to be laugh out loud funny.
Yeah. I mean, every time you do stand up, it's your own one woman show. You're this avant-garde lady who's doing this amazing art show right there in front of everyone, and they're honored. They should be honored to be there. They're experiencing this.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to remember this next time I'm dying on stage.
Yeah. Just imagine, instead of in a dark comedy club, you're in like a gallery, and there's like a guy two rooms over who's just covering himself with paint, and people are like, brilliant, I love it. So anything that you do is better than that. Yeah.
I love that. No, you know what? I love that so much. Like, I'm going to honestly remember this next time I feel like I'm dying. I really am, because it's such a strange thing, because you just stand up. That's the main priority, is to make people laugh. Like, that's the whole objective.
Yeah.
But not every audience is going to be like that. And you just have to. Aye, I think that's really good advice. Imagine myself at like some fancy art gallery.
Hey, man. Oh, because have you ever seen things like, it's almost like we were talking about earlier with theater, like they hold themselves in this like big highfalutin, and you're like, guys, we're doing like guys and dolls. Like, how intense do you have to be?
Yeah.
Like, everyone needs to relax. We are all being paid to do theater. Can't we just be happy? Like, what is happening?
Totally.
You know, like, it's such a funny situation. But, you know, if you can imagine that this one world where it's just a little bit weirder, you can be weird and it's totally okay. Plus, okay,
totally.
Realistically, you're doing the right thing. You are, it's like we were talking about a second ago too, like culturally, like artists are here to react to the world around them. And this is the world. I'm terribly sorry, but this is the world, and you are just reacting to it because that's who you are. You're an artist.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, you know.
I love that.
Seven-year-old,
I'm,
you
I'm
knew
gonna
it.
Take this.
Yeah. She was ready to be in an art gallery.
This is like therapy.
Hey, man, I just want to support people and make people do good work and share them with the world. So if I can give you, if I can say something that makes you feel better, I'm into it. Whatever I can do.
Oh,
always.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, so, okay. So we're wrapping it up. We've been talking for a while. You're so great. Thank you for giving me your time. One final thing before we finish is we were just talking about, you know, your stuff. If you, since you have been doing this for a long time, do you have any advice for anybody who might be starting stand up or starting to do this kind of thing? What gets you through it in the harder times? What makes you move forward and keep working even when there's a lot of things against you?
Yeah, I think it's probably something that I'm still battling now. I think, you know, any actor or comedian would probably tell you the same thing. But like, I even read an interview the other day with Helen Hunt, who's one of my favorite actresses, and it was like one of those articles that kind of made me feel relief and anxiety, because at the end of the article she said, "Oh my God, I panic after every job. I think it's my last job." And I'm like, oh my God, you're Helen Hunt. Like, you've won an Oscar. Like, you're a big, big deal. But even she, you know, has that fear at the end of every job. Like, oh my God, this is the last job I'll ever do.
Yeah.
And it's not like an attention-seeking thing. It's like a genuine fear.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, when you hear someone like that saying it, you're kind of like, oh my God, like everyone feels this.
Yeah.
And no matter what level. But then at the same time, you're like, oh, Helen Hunt, get a grip. Peace. You're like, you're Helen Hunt. No, so totally. So I like, to anyone who's listening to this, who is like maybe trying or you know, getting into stand-up or acting, I honestly think, and I know it's probably like the oldest thing you've ever heard, but like perseverance. And I know, even hearing myself say that, like if I 10 years ago, if I'd heard someone say this in a podcast, like, you know, perseverance, I'd be like, oh, come on. like, you know, come on, really. But it is, you know, that whole it's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Yeah.
And it's such a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true and it's real, and that's why people still say it. Because you've got to have the perseverance, you've got to have the energy to last the course. And I've seen so many people give up. Like, because, you know, I'm 32 now. I've been going for a long time. Like, I got my first professional acting job when I was 17. And I've seen so many people drop, you know, like, who've just kind of gone, nah, fuck this. This isn't for me.
Yeah.
And they've gone off to do something completely different. And, you know, fair enough. Like, fair enough to them, because they might have found happiness in whatever else they chose. And I think that's good, because I think if you're not happy doing something, you absolutely should leave. But I just think it's been so interesting to see so many people, like, stop it. Mm-hmm. And but then the few of us that have hung on like a fucking cockroach, things are starting to happen for, you know. And I think that whole thing, when I saw that girl Chloe Fineman get on SNL the other day, I was like so inspired by that, because I was like, oh my god, I noticed this girl like 2 years ago and I thought she's brilliant. And you know, and it's like stories like that, you're like, hard work, determination, they pay off, they really do. So it's kind of
also like putting yourself out there. Like, you found her because she put herself out there. You know what I mean?
Yes,
people want things to happen to them, but they don't do anything. Like your drama school said, and like we're talking about now, you got to be doing projects. You just got to be making stuff. If she didn't go online, if she didn't like film herself doing this impression, it never would have found its way into your hands. And it never would have found its way to the hands of the SNL people. Like, that's how you
if
have
she'd
to
been
keep
doing it in
working.
Her bedroom and not sharing it with anyone.
If you just decide your stuff is not good enough, everyone else is going to agree, because you're not putting it out there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have to put it out there. And in terms of like the, because I know that's quite like generic, just saying just hang on, I think it is so, so important to be creating your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't show it to the world, even if you, you know, don't essentially put it out there, but just as long as you're staying inspired, you know, like writing stuff, having ideas for sketches, and or even doing open mics, you know, things that might not necessarily be financially beneficial or anything, but just something to keep you inspired. Because, in my mid-20s, I just wasn't inspired at all. And I was kind of like, you know, I was miserable, because, like, I was desperate to be doing more acting. And I was really trying, you know, going to auditions and stuff, but you know, nothing was really happening. And then, I put a pen to a bit of paper, and I felt more creative than I'd ever felt in my life. And now I'm like, oh my God, comedy saved me, man. Like, genuinely saved my life. Like, by just putting my thoughts out there and then, you know, making money from it and making people laugh. And so I just think, like, you have to hang on, you have to try and stay creative. And number one is you have to keep that self-belief, because there'll be so many people who tell you you can't do it. And there's so many people that try and, you know, we're talking about like negative people and negative energies, and so many people that try and bring you down. And it's just like not listening to that. It's like being your biggest fan, like go full Lady Gaga. And you gotta love yourself and keep going.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's great advice. And thank you so much for sharing your story. And like, I loved our conversation. I feel super good about this. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having, honestly, it's been so nice. It's been such a lovely like way to spend an evening just chatting. And so thank you for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.